Blog Talk Radio.
You have room on your team for this little space, bitch. Welcome, everybody, to Fantasy Football Tonight. I'm your host, Todd the True Gooferino, and of course, I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. R.C. Rizzo. We're on a special Thursday edition as Block Talk Radio was having some technical difficulties yesterday, and I believe our show and a few other shows couldn't get on yesterday, so we just had to reschedule for today at 3 o'clock, but we are, of course, excited for another grand show. I want to get started some quick news before RC gets in there, because he hates it when I talk about leagues for some odd reason, even though that's what we're all about, right? Right? We did officially close the Block Talk Radio 3 league. I'm sorry, guys, I set up some of the leagues I'm going to participate in this year. But we do have the first two leagues. They're both full and ready to go. In fact, we have the draft coming up in about... Oh, I think in about 2 hours, we're going to have the draft going on for maybe almost 3 hours for the Block Talk Radio 1, which has all of our personal favorites in there, including Jason and RC and of course, Lockdown and Eddie and Super Bowl Homeboy and all the guys, Scott, that is. We're going to be having that one going in a matter of moments, and some news to talk about, of course, that's going to impact that draft along with other drafts. Let's get RC in here. RC, how are you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, just getting the show started. And informed everybody that we do have a draft today. Today is our Block Talk Radio main league, as I like to call it. This is really the Block Talk League 1 draft coming up in about 3 hours. And I wanted to know, first of all, are you excited?
You know, it's the first I heard of it. So, yeah, now I am. It sounds good. I'm glad you know, I got a chance to talk to you because I probably would have just auto-drafted.
That would have been okay. It would have been a little bit better chance for everybody to beat up on you, so that would work out. Actually, who knows? In this age, who knows how badly the auto-draft would have been, right?
Yeah, you know, sometimes the Yahoo auto-drafting has actually gotten better over the years, but I remember a couple years ago, it was just terrible. You know who's the worst? I've actually done a draft on CBS and ESPN, and CBS, their auto draft, their vault rankings are just terrible. So if you're going to be doing any drafting on CBS, you got to be careful.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, listen, let's just give the advice. Try to make it to your draft. How about that? Let's just do that and call it a day. Because, I mean, I'll tell you right now, the news going around right now, it's not really the news, it's just what's happening right now, is the receivers. We're just losing receivers. Every show, more and more often, RC, we're seeing now receivers going down with injuries. Obviously, you know, you got Jordy Nelson out there, you got Kelvin Benjamin out there. You know, now today, just the latest news, you know, Kevin White, we don't even know if we're going to see him this year. But the latest news is Martavis Bryant is facing a 4-game suspension. Clearly, you know, he is appealing it, which, you know, who knows what he'll get it appealed down to, 3 games, 2 games. But we know he's going to miss time now. And this obviously is heavily impacting the draft for wide receivers, RC. And I wanted to get your take on any other ones that I left out of there, out of the losses we've taken, the absolute carnage of wide receivers, and the season hasn't even started. But what's your take on Martavis Bennett? We talked about him a few weeks ago. You know how high I am on him. Obviously this has to change your point of view no matter what.
Yeah, you know, it definitely could force Sammy Coates into relevancy. So he's a guy to keep an eye on. You know, this definitely is a high-powered passing offense, so I can understand why you're high on him. In drafts, I haven't been able to get Antonio Brown. I really don't trust these. I know that, you know, one of them's going to be, like, probably a fantasy stud. I can't figure out which one it's going to be. So, I mean, Marcus Wheaton, I think you definitely bump up your draft boards at this point. Definitely Sammy Coates. We'll see what he can do. He's actually a pretty talented young receiver. He's a guy that, you know, in really deep drafts, you might want to flag him, you know, for a speculative pick.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't worry too much about him. I mean, I do, but obviously this is going to impact his draft location, which I know that, you know, with all the receivers that have been going down as of late. That he has certainly been moving up the charts, along with guys like Jordan Matthew and Brandon Cooks. With all of the top guys going down, who else have we lost out of that top list? I'm just trying to make sure if there was anybody else that I forgot.
Well, you mentioned the big ones, obviously Jordy Nelson and Kelvin Benjamin, but one guy that I was really looking forward to seeing play, and I thought he would really be able to have a big role this year, was Breshad Perriman from Baltimore, and it looks like it's likely he's going to end up missing the entire preseason, and you know, for a rookie, that definitely puts you at a very severe disadvantage. But he's a guy that if he was able to get on the field, you know, in the preseason, I thought that he probably among the rookie wide receivers was definitely going to make an impact. So, unfortunately, that does not look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, no, you and I were obviously, you know, somewhat high on the Baltimore Ravens, Breshad Perriman. And, you know, and I've been watching him slip in the drafts because I've been wanting to obviously take him. But with his current injury problems and the fact that we don't know where he's going to be or what his exact status is going to be week one, you know, it's just he's a guy that I don't want to touch. And frankly, you know, he's not the only one out there, RC. There are numerous players out there who are fighting off these small, but you know, or maybe not quite small injuries in the preseason that have impacted really the draft. And this is why I try to tell you, and I try to tell the listeners as far as you know the strategy, because we've always talked strategy. I mean, other people copy it and do their little things with strategy, but we always focus on strategy because that's what wins, is strategy. And part of that strategy is you don't want to pick a bunch of players because you're getting them at a great value in the draft because of injuries. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, a groin injury is something that lingers. A hamstring injury is something that lingers. And so you've got to, you know, not only do you have to have a backup plan for those players, but like, for example, what's going on in down there in Atlanta where you have both Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, both nursing some sore hamstrings. I mean, they should, but I believe both be back to practice now. But it's a worrisome problem because you want to make sure that those hamstrings are ready to go week one and not sitting on your bench collecting dust because they're going to be out, or that they do come back and, of course, you know, hurt it further. Call that the Arian Foster injury, you know, syndrome, maybe you want to call it syndrome, where, you know, you say you're all better, you come back and you injure the same body part, a.k.a. hamstring or groin, and eventually go out with surgery. But that's what we're looking at right now, and that's the problem with a lot of these receivers and even running backs that are being drafted right now, RC, or that are falling in drafts, that they're facing some injury woes. What would your take be and your strategical device be for guys who are jumping on players or have the opportunity to draft players who are currently nursing injuries, not necessarily coming off an injury? We'll talk about like the Victor Cruises in a second. But we're talking about the guys who have gotten injured in the preseason and seem to have somewhat nagging injuries, like Joy Bell and company. What do you do with those guys?
You got to be careful because, you know, like you're saying, these things could be more serious than than what we're seeing in the reports. Like, for example, the thing with Joy Cole looks like it has a possibility of lingering. Not only that, but he's got very stiff competition breathing down his neck in Abdullah. And I think, you know, as a consequence, Bell is probably being overdrafted right now. But you got to stay on top of, like, what, like you're saying, what's going on. The Coleman and the Freeman injuries look like were minor hamstring issues. So that might give you an opportunity to get them a little bit later in the draft than you would have otherwise. The Todd Gurley thing, it was encouraging to see that he made it back to the practice. He was probably being pushed down further than he should have. So you have to take it on a case-by-case basis. In some situations, it's more serious than others. And Joik Bell, I think that's a situation where you definitely want to be careful with. You know, also Victor Cruz, you mentioned, that does not look like it's completely harmless injury, and that could also be a lingering situation. So that's one that you have to stay on top of.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, and I want to talk about Victor Cruz a little bit because this is a guy that, you know, that is somewhat fascinating. You know, not only is he coming off, obviously, the season-ending surgery or injury they had last season, I believe he has, like, a sore calf, or it's his calf. And they're gonna rest him. I think he's going to be fine, but this is a guy that, like, two seasons ago, you were looking at a second, third round draft pick. Now you have Victor Cruz falling. Where does RC have Victor Cruz falling to? I mean, it's off the charts for how far he's gone down on the list here. I can't even find him. Do you know what his average draft position is? Oh, there it is. I see him. Is 116 what we're looking at?
Yeah, about eighth round.
Right? Yeah, but he's fallen to the eighth round. And frankly, in some of our drafts that we've done so far, he's fallen even further than that. I think I picked him up in the 10th or 11th round in one of the drafts. Maybe I think it was that. My take on this is pretty – yeah, I got him in the 10th round. This is a great value pick. You know, when you have a guy who missed the entire season and seems to be on a down offense, I mean, I don't know why people are so down on the New York Giants offense. There does seem to be, I mean, unless your name is Odell Beckham Jr. IV, you don't have any pop on the Giants offense. But I'm going to tell you this right now. Eli Manning had a little bit of a resurgence with Odell Beckham because Odell Beckham didn't get touchdown passes from somebody else. And now he did that with basically Reuben Randall and no help on the other side. So, you know, with Victor Cruz out, well, now you're going to have Victor Cruz out there. You have plentiful supply of running backs, including Shane Vereen now entering the game to take a little bit of attention of some of that secondary or at least linebacking crew who's going to have to cover him. This opens the door now, I believe, for Victor Cruz, and I think that he's going to be poised for a great comeback. Outside of this calf injury, I've heard nothing but great things out of the preseason that his speed is up to his normal speed. And I think if you have those two guys on each side of the field and you're a defense and you have to try to cover both of them, well, clearly your attempt to shut down Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be first and foremost. And that, I think, is going to leave Victor Cruz open for quite a few passes, especially at least, let's put it this way, one-on-one coverage where he excels in. And I'm sorry, but I just think getting Victor Cruz in the 10th round, albeit there's a gamble there, it's one worth taking.
Yeah, no, and you very well could be right. I mean, getting Victor Cruz in the 10th round could be quite a coup. But remember, it's not just the calf. The calf is the current issue. He basically tore his patellar tendon. And that's fairly serious, and that's a little bit difficult to come back from speed. The reports are that, you know, he's running full speed, but, you know, we're not going to know really the truth about that until we see him. Yeah, you're right. But certainly in the 10th round, absolutely worth the gamble because, like you're saying, what you're getting there is really a premier receiver that was going in the second round the year before. Now he's got a monster on the opposite side of the field from him, and he basically is going to be wide open a lot more often.
That's what we're hoping for, and I do understand the torn tendon from last year in his knee, and that's a pretty serious injury. But we've seen it a lot, and we've seen a lot of NFL players come back from it. So we're hoping for Victor Cruz to come back from that. But again, taking a 10th round flyer on him, not the worst idea. Now, last week we said that we were in the middle of two of our expert league drafts, RC, which, by the way, I got myself into another one. I got invited to one from the Fantasy Sports Writers Association, Evan Silva's league. So I can't wait to have some fun in that one. That was going to be a fun one. But either way, the biggest one right now is the Drunken Pirate Slap Fight Expert League, RC. And remember we had a bet last week. What was that bet? What round did you say we were going to be on by the time we had the show Wednesday?
I think I said something stupid like round 16.
Yes. And I said something stupid like 10. Well, we were at 11. We were in round 11. So
yeah,
that's how that ball bounces.
No,
I tried to get
through
as fast as I could.
We're actually in the 13th round, but it doesn't count because it was as of yesterday, and you're right. As of yesterday, we're probably round 11. Yep.
Yes. So now I want to talk about this draft. We don't got to talk about as much about the first round or the early rounds because everybody kind of knows that, but I do want to talk about Matt Forte. This is a guy that I find he was taken in this draft with the 6th overall pick. And I'm going to ask you this question. I'm going to give a little supporting evidence to it. But Matt Forte, to me, is – I think people are drafting him off what he used to be and not what he is. And I'm talking about no matter who you are in the world, whether you're an expert or not, there's like this love affair with a running back who's on the – downside of his career. I mean, Matt Forte is going to be 30 this year. I believe he turns 30 in December, if I'm not mistaken. And last year, his numbers were decent. He had 1,000 rushing yards, 6 touchdowns. On the receiving end, I believe he had another 4 touchdowns and about 800 yards. That's where he went crazy. He produced the receiving end. But this is a guy who's getting a little older, RC, and this is a guy who plays with Jay Cutler, and this is a guy who plays on a team that's really taken a beating in the passing game, not only with the offensive line being just not there, but guys like Brandon Marshall vanishing, and becoming the Alshon Jeffrey and Martellus Bennett show, and God knows how happy Martellus Bennett's going to be. He's always has a contract issue or something. But do you believe that, in your opinion, that Matt Forte should still be, especially with the team that he's on, the craziness that surrounds the Bears and the complete inconsistency of the Bears, do you think he's a number one draft pick still?
No, but for the reasons that you mentioned, and one of which is that he's pushing 30, and that shouldn't matter. I mean, he should be fine. I mean, he's still just outside of his – But aside from that, the real reason would be last year he had 130 targets in the Mark Trestman offense. And I think this year you can shave maybe up to about 50 targets off of that. So that makes him far, far less appealing. If you're going by last year's numbers, it's a big mistake because, like you said, 130 targets, 800 yards receiving, 100 receptions, that probably is going to get cut in half. Because when you look at, like, even Le'Veon Bell, who was also very active in the passing game, he only had 100 targets last year, and that was high. And then if you look at, like, a more traditional running back like Eddie Lacy, he had 55 targets. So I would say that expect somewhere in the middle of there, and that's where, you can arrive at like 80. Half those receiving yards are probably going to go away.
Yeah, I mean, people are looking at that 102 receptions that he got, and they're going to look at that, and they're going to say, oh, my God, that's amazing. He's the greatest in the world. But let's be frank here. I mean, besides his rookie season, It wasn't until 2013 that he even achieved more than 63, you know, 63. And then, of course, he went from 74 to 102. So, and what a lot of those, I believe, honestly, were a lot of little, you know, Jay Cutler couldn't find anybody open. He's getting blitzed too quickly. I mean, I saw the games. You saw the games. He flips it over, you know, does a little check off to Matt Forte and calls it a day. I do agree with you that those are going to simmer down in the new offense. And I don't believe you're going to see him achieve that many total in receptions. But in effect, you know, if you actually look at it, I mean, his number of carries dropped by about 23 from the year before where he had his really, you know, one of his bigger years. So this is an offense. I'll end it on this. This is an offense that I just would rather, outside of maybe Martellus Bennett, would rather just steer away from. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Matt Forte is still a worthy late second-round draft pick. But I think when the end comes and he puts up the numbers that he's going to put up, it's going to be difficult to not only vouch for him being a number one draft pick, but for even, you know, drafting him at all. As opposed to the talent you could have gotten around him, and that's my concern with him. And let's not forget he does have a little bit of, you know, he can't get injured. I mean, especially at 30, you know, those start to creep in. He has had some injuries in his career, but that can also creep in as well, RC.
Yeah, and really the three guys that are going right after him, you know, going by average draft, I would definitely take two of them, LeSean McCoy. I would take over Forte. C.J. Anderson, I would probably take over Forte. And then maybe even Melvin Gordon. So you're right. And that would put him in the late second, early third round, which is probably a more suitable spot for Forte.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think a Latavius Murray would be a guy that I would take more of a chance on. And getting him, and I'm talking about a guy that you're getting probably mid to late third round in a Latavius Murray, is to me a better value at that draft than getting a Matt Forte in the first or even midway through the second round. So that's what I would do. And I did draft Latavius. I didn't draft him in this one that we're talking about. Roto Experts did. But I did draft him in our other league, and I'm very happy about having him on the team. All right, another guy that I wanted to go ahead.
Before you move on, I don't think you can compare Latavius Murray with Forte because, you know, Forte is definitely a solid, you know, late second rounder. Latavius Murray, I think you got to be a little careful about. And I don't where did you say you got him?
Oh, he was taken in this draft. It wasn't by me. It was by Roto Experts. Looked like. Pick 11 of the third round, so late third round.
Okay, because his average draft is about the middle of the fourth round, which is probably about the right spot. That's a big difference between, you know, Forte and Murray. I mean, that's two rounds later. In that area where Murray's being picked, you know, that's where Ellington's being picked. That's where Frank Gore's being picked. So, yeah, I would definitely like to have Murray instead of Gore or Ellington, but I would definitely rather have Forte over any of those guys, of course, right?
Over any of course.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, I think you might have misunderstood me. I would rather have Latavius Murray than Matt Forte. If I'm not making myself clear, I'd rather have Murray in the fourth round than take Matt Forte in the first round. As a matter of fact, let me take a look at our other draft and see where Matt Forte went in the other draft. It looks like in the other draft, Forte. Oh, it's actually the pick of the second round. See, again, I would, you know, when you see the guys that are going around him with Jeremy Hill and the aforementioned Jordy Nelson, which was picked before he went down with his injury, and guys like Randall Cobb, T.Y. Hilton, Mike Evans. I mean, there are guys here that I'd rather, more solidified guys that I would rather have, even DeMarco Murray, than Matt Forte at this point. But Latavius Murray, he's a guy that put up very good numbers last year on an offense that's only getting better. This for him. And has really started mopping up. He's basically between, he solidified the offense, giving it a running game, which allowed Derek Carr to grow. And now Derek Carr, you know, got rid of some of those old receivers he had, like Jones from Green Bay, the old guy from Jones, James Jones. And now he's added in Amari Cooper, and he has the veteran Michael Crabtree, who I think might, you know, have a chance to grow in this offense. You know, not going to be super duper, but grow nonetheless. And so now he has these weapons. He has, of course, Rivera as a tight end, and Murray. And then they even brought in Roy Helu for the third, to be like more of the pass catching down back, third down back. And I think it's going to be a fantastic offense. And this is an offense that is coming together, not one like the Bears that's breaking apart. And I think there's a big difference there.
Yeah, no doubt. I understand your point now about you're not really comparing Forte versus Murray. What you're saying is that you'd rather take a chance on Murray in the fourth than take a chance on Forte in the second. And I totally agree with that. And, yeah, looking at our other – yeah, so you got Murray at pick 404, and Forte went right about where he was supposed to go, like 205 or so. Yeah, without question, Murray is the better value. He does come with some risk, though, because he doesn't have a long resume. What we did see from him was at times spectacular, you know, that's for sure. And you're absolutely correct about the ascending offense. So, yeah, Murray this year, you know, looks like a pretty solid pick. But, I mean, in that area, you know, honestly, I would rather wait. I think T.J. Yeldon, even though – and you're probably going to disagree with this, and you're probably right. To me, T.J. Yeldon, even though he's on an awful offense, I think he's just going to get more volume. And I think you get him around later in five. To me, that has been my preference so far. But you might be right with Murray, where the upside is just seems to be like so much bigger than what Yeldon can give you.
I'll hold on a second. I'm trying to fix my sound here. Give me 1 second. All right, there we go. I think I got it situated. We were having a little bit of problems with, you know, that whole what do you call it? Their hi-fi doesn't really work that well. That's what I was on. I was on the Blog Talk Radio hi-fi connection, and you were blanking in and out, and apparently so was I. So I switched mics now, and I'm on the hi-fi. Can you hear me okay, RC?
Yep. Yeah, and before
okay.
I was echoing, and it seems like that went away now, so that's good.
Okay, excellent. You know, and T.J. Yeldon is an interesting prospect. He's obviously going to be the main back. And whenever, you know, in this league right now, finding a main back is a key strategy. You know, again, I try to sit here and talk about the strategy that we are going to have to deal with. I mean, you can play all day and say, listen, I have the best team in the world. I mean, I got this back who's, you know, the number one back. I got, you know, whatever, DeMarco Murray. And I got the number one back on, you know, on so-and-so team. It doesn't really make a difference. If you don't have a back who is a solidified, not only number one back, but really the only back, outside of maybe a third down back coming in for you, then you have a problem because that back is not going to get the number of carries that you hope for. For example, when you look at the Eagles situation, which we talked about last week, I mean, the Eagles have come out and said, you know, DeMarco Murray will be lucky to get 35% of the carries. Well, I don't want a running back, and I'm certainly not going to draft a running back in the second round who's getting 35% of the carries. I want to get a guy who's getting the majority of the carries. And, you know, and that's where a T.J. Yeldon type of guy comes in, a Latavius Murray comes in, certainly a Matt Forte, the solidified carrier for the Chicago Bears. So he definitely falls along those routes. But there are a lot of these situations right now, like in San Francisco, where you have Carlos Hyde, you have Reggie Bush, and who's the other guy fighting for the spot there, RC?
I'm sorry,
Mike, the third running back in San Francisco.
Oh, they've got all kinds of running backs in San Francisco. Let me check it out. They've got Hyde, Bush, Hunter, and Mike Davis. Yeah, Hunter, you're right. And Hunter's not bad. I would think that Reggie Bush was such a colossal disappointment last year. He really looked done. I would, you know, if you want the backup to Hyde, I would say Hunter might be the better bet. And he's pretty much going undrafted, it seems.
Yeah, and the thing is, you don't know at this point. I mean, and I know I'm quite positive the 49ers aren't 100% sure. I mean, they seem to be really stuck on Carlos Hyde, and I think Carlos Hyde's a fantastic back, and I certainly don't believe that he's been given the chance yet to really shine, whether it be in preseason or the few reps that he had last season. In fact, last season he actually looked pretty good. So I do believe that job will be his. But the bottom line is he's going to share time. I mean, you're going to see Kendall Hunter. You're going to see Reggie Bush. You're going to see all those guys mix in there, and that is going to devalue that running back. And, of course, this is why it comes down to this, Arce. This is why for years I preached, listen, you want to win at fantasy football, you got to do two things. Number one, you got to get a good quarterback. I mean, you can get a quarterback later in the draft. I don't care where you get the good quarterback, but you got to get a quarterback that produces, a guy that can throw 200 to 250 yards and two touchdowns on average every game. You need that because, for the love of God, if the rest of your team fails, at least you have that. And also, for the love of God, a second for the love of God, if the guy you're playing has one of the elite quarterbacks, then you're putting yourself at a major disadvantage. And that's one of the strategical points that I've tried to make in, you know, not as much this year so far, but I will now, RC, and I'm going to get your take on this. But it comes down to, you know, player versus player matchups. You know, and it's kind of the way, you know, bookies can kind of look at it, if you want to say. Or, you know, I mean, I'm here in Las Vegas, so I mean from a legal standpoint. But if you look at, if you're playing against a guy who has Joe Flacco and you have Drew Brees, you know, and we're assuming Drew Brees is going to be pretty good this year. Let's just make that assumption for the case in point. You know, you're going to have maybe a 10-point advantage with Drew Brees over Joe Flacco. Might not quite be 10 points, might be 8 points, but it's going to be an advantage, a spread that you're going to be given, say, by a Las Vegas handicapper, that you have an 8-point spread just alone with Drew Brees. You want to get as many of those matchups as you can. And the other way to get them is in the wide receiver area. You know, forget these running back by committees. I'm tired of them. I want to go to the wide receivers and say, listen, if the quarterback's going to throw 25 times, maybe 30 times a game, you know, and he has two wideouts primarily to throw to, you know, my guys are going to get some targets. They're going to catch, you know, hopefully catch some touchdowns. And if you haven't been noticing, not only have targets been going up over the years for wide receivers, but so have touchdowns. I mean, it's like it used to be phenomenal if your receiver broke 10, 11, 12 TDs. I mean, you had a top-notch guy. But last year we had a ton of guys who broke the 10 TD mark. So it's more common now. So I would rather say, listen, I want you to handicap my quarterback and three receivers against your quarterback and three receivers. Let's see what the spread is in my favor, hopefully. And then we'll see if your running backs can make that up against my running backs. Take it away, RC.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. But, you know, the opposite side of that is that it really puts the running backs that we think are going to receive the majority carries at a premium, right? That becomes a shorter list, right, than it used to be. So that's the opposite side of that. I want to ask you, I did a draft yesterday, and you just mentioned about Murray and the possibility of him being platooned. I got him in actually the early third round, and my first two picks were Adrian Peterson. Then I got Andrew Luck in the late second round, and then my next pick was DeMarco Murray. Now, that's three picks without one of your beloved receivers. And what I did notice, to your point, is at that point in the draft, when I came back around to pick in the late fourth, the receivers were gone. And the guy I ended up with as my first receiver was Allen Robinson from Jacksonville. So, you know, what do you think about those four picks?
What was the other one? The other running back you got?
So I had the number two hole, and I ended up with Adrian Peterson at number two. Then when I came around to pick, then by the way, this was a 10-team league. When I came around to pick 19, I got Andrew Luck. Then when I came around at pick 22, I got DeMarco Murray.
Well, I'll tell you this. This is a 10-team league, and by the fourth round, all the first and second and, you know, and some of the third-tier wide receivers were gone. That's telling me the rest of your team, the rest of those other nine teams, loaded up on wideouts. I mean, there's at least eight or nine tier one wide receivers. Those guys must have all obviously been gone. No doubt they would have been gone either, no matter how small the league was. But I'll say this. I'm going to say this. Number one, you were very lucky to get Andrew Luck. I mean, your point system must be insanely skewed against quarterbacks to get him with the 19th pick. Is there something wrong with the scoring system that I don't know about?
No, it's just that, you know, pretty much a function of what you were saying about the premium on wide receivers this year. Because when you looked at how the draft went, the first four picks were running backs. Then after that, it was Antonio Brown went at 5, Dez Bryant at 6, Demaryius Thomas went, Julio Jones went, Odell Beckham, Calvin Johnson, A.J. Green, Randall Cobb, and then I was able to get Andrew Luck. And right after Andrew Luck, Jordan Matthews went in the second round, which I found very surprising. And then Mike Evans, and then I got DeMarco Murray. Now, the guys I passed on were Alshon Jeffrey, T.Y. Hilton, Emmanuel Sanders, DeAndre Hopkins went, and then Brandon Cooks. The guy I would have taken was Brandon Cooks at 22, but I just valued DeMarco Murray higher than him. So at that point, I think I made the right choice. But the point being, all those elite receivers went in the first two rounds.
I'll say this, DRC. I'm going to say this because you know, I mean, you don't get a lot. You know, sometimes I say some things that maybe I shouldn't say, and sometimes I say things that need to be said. You know, and for years, you know, when we started doing this, this is our ninth year doing the show. It's not like we just started doing this. We woke up this morning and said, let's do a podcast. Some guys out there do that. We didn't do that. But going back years ago, I just started saying, especially when PPR League started up and really started becoming the standard. I hate people go, hey, standard scoring system. No, the standard is PPR now, so face up. You know, and I started to say, listen, I'm so tired of, you know, the first whole round being dominated by running backs. And then when we look back at the last season, we see, oh, my God, six of those running backs were absolute crap. And they all fall to the second, third, fourth rounds of the next year's draft. Some of them don't even play again because of injuries. Who knows what happened? You know, but you look at the receivers, and most of them flourish. Most. And we did – and there was actually was a study done on that by Yahoo. I remember that. And it proved it. Not by a whole – the percentage wasn't that great of a deal, but quarterbacks and receivers did quite well from the first round after year after year after year as opposed to the running backs. But that being said, you need to, you know – you need to build up the receiving corps. So in this draft right now where you're standing in those first three picks, in not establishing a receiving game, you've put yourself in the danger of, you know, really getting hurt. And here's why. You're going to go into the first game. You have a fantastic quarterback. The fact that you got Luck is going to hold you together because he didn't put a point. Why you didn't want Hilton and Luck, I mean, if you believe in Luck, you got to believe in T.Y. Hilton. I mean, I know there's Dante Moncrief and Andre Johnson and Phil Dorsett out there, but those guys are secondary to T.Y. Hilton. So I would have snatched onto him. And then you have the other elite wide receiver who I believe next year will be a second-round draft pick, and Brandon Cooks, who I am all over so far this year, who you could have gotten, and you could have cored up that, you know, I mean, you already had Adrian Peterson. And you got to look, because this is, okay, before I go – In the current draft we're in, I had the fourth pick, and I took Le'Veon Bell, okay? I wanted Le'Veon Bell. I don't care about him missing his first two games. In fact, later on in the draft, I took D'Angelo Williams, so I got that wrapped up. But I got Le'Veon Bell. When I did that, when I said, fine, I'm taking a running back draft in the first round, I said I no longer have to look at running back number two for a while. For a while, I do not have to concern myself. I have such a powerful running back number one, that is enough to hold together my running back crew for quite a while in this draft. And I mean by quite a while, maybe fifth or sixth round I can start looking again. And I loaded up on wide receivers after that, RC. And I think for you going in the third pick with a secondary running back, you certainly have a great running game. There's no doubt about it. It's a fantastic running game. But your receiving game is going to suffer, and you need more receivers than you need running backs, if I'm not mistaken, right? You need 3 or 4 in that league?
Well, no, actually, this league's a little different. And the reason why I took that DeMarco Murray there, see, and the other thing, too, is that I couldn't justify taking Cooks at that spot when Murray was still there because, you know, average draft has Murray going around before Cooks, right? The other thing about Cooks is that I love him, but I loved him last year when you can get him in the 9th round and take a gamble on him. This year, you know, he should, you know, definitely come around. It's the second year. He should, but he really didn't live up to the expectations last year. And I realize maybe that's a lot to put on a rookie, but there are still some doubts about the New Orleans offense and whether or not Drew Brees is declining and what's going on over there. So I couldn't justify taking Cooks at that spot when Murray was still there. But let me tell you what I ended up with at receivers, which I don't think ended up that bad. So I ended up giving – I took Melvin Gordon with the 5th-round pick. So further going against your gospel of not loading up on running backs. So now my running – and once again, I don't know if I mentioned, but there's a flex position that's RB wide receiver. So I could actually start three running backs if I wanted to. So Allen Robinson went before him. I got Melvin Gordon with the 5th. Then I focused on receivers. I ended up getting DeSean Jackson with the 6th round, Golden Tate in the 7th. Then I took Shane Vereen, a 4th running back, because he was still there, and I think he's actually going to have a pretty good season. Then I got Mike Wallace in the 9th round. And then my next receiver was Brian Quick. So my receivers are Brian Quick, Mike Wallace, Golden Tate, DeSean Jackson, and Allen Robinson. Now, that might not end up being so bad, right?
No, actually, you know what? I was just going to talk to you about that. I was going to say, listen, there are plenty of receivers later in the draft you can get to make up for the folly that you persisted with yourself, and you got a couple of them right there. I mean, first of all, Golden Tate, I'm sorry, I consider Golden Tate a tier, I would say, low-end tier 2 wide receiver. I don't know why people are so down on him. I mean, that guy is so hard to cover, it's not even funny, and especially with the Calvin Johnson on the other side of him, he's not going to have a lot of competition for coverage. So I love Golden Tate. I didn't know he was still available. Certainly, you know, he is, I mean, I would have taken him over Allen Robinson, to be honest with you. So the fact that you got both of them, it's pretty good. And Mike Wallace is another one of those intriguing wide receivers. Moving to Minnesota, taking his bad attitude on to a new show, and that new show is going to be with Teddy Bridgewater. But he seems to be, you know, cleaning it up. Who knows? He's going to be on that, you know, on that wonderful field in Minnesota to see, you know, where a lot of, you know, good receivers have shined out there in the old purple and black. So who knows? Those guys right there aren't too shabby. And then, of course, Brian Quick, assuming he's 100% healthy to start the season, he's another great late pick, especially now that he has Nick Foles with him, you know, to get him the ball. So not too bad. You didn't end up with too bad picks there, RC.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, the short list of receivers that I think we both would consider elite, it's really just about 10 guys, right? It's Antonio Brown, Dez Bryant, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, Demaryius Thomas, Calvin Johnson, A.J. Green. Jordy Nelson is now off the list, and I guess you can now put Randall Cobb on there. Mike Evans, he's got a little bit of an injury thing going on, but he should turn out to be your elite guy. Alshon Jeffrey, at that point, I think it's borderline, right? And then when you get into T.Y. Hilton, he's definitely on that border as well. And then when you get past that, there's not really a sure thing that I think warrants a really high pick over a running back. Because then you get into DeAndre Hopkins, where he should be good, but is he better than DeMarco Murray? No, I don't think so, unless it's true that what you're saying is that DeMarco Murray is only going to get 35% of carries. I personally don't think that's what's going to happen. Otherwise, I wouldn't have picked him. Brandon Cooks still has some questions. He should be great, but am I going to take him over DeMarco Murray? No. Emmanuel Sanders, No, Jordan Matthews, I love him, but I think he's going really high this year. I'm not going to reach for him. Amari Cooper is a rookie. Yeah, he's going to, I mean, by all accounts, it looks like he's going to have a great career. Is he going to come out of the gate as a Hall of Famer? No. So are you going to take him over DeMarco Murray? Absolutely not. So you got to be careful, I think. You know, there's like 9-10 guys where, yeah, they're elite, and you definitely want to try to get one of them. But, you know, Andrew Luck was hanging out there in the late second round. I could have taken a receiver instead, and maybe that would have been the right choice, but I figure, you know, I might as well just take Andrew Luck. So if there was a spot I could have taken a receiver, it was there. So do you disagree with – maybe I shouldn't have taken Andrew Luck and waited on a quarterback. What do you think about that?
Well, no, I mean, I'm not going to say that. You know, Andrew Luck in both these drafts went overall number one, so to say that would be silly. I think you did fine with Andrew Luck. I didn't think you did fine with Adrian Peterson. Listen, you know, I'm a huge DeMarco Murray fan. He's a local Las Vegas kid, you know, and frankly, he was a Dallas Cowboy. And, I'm a favoritism towards my team. The problem that I have with him on the Eagles is this. Number one, on the Cowboys, he had that massive offensive line, which really broke a lot of holes open for him. And he put up tremendous numbers because of that. Now, those numbers didn't translate into a number one draft pick. Well, why isn't he going number one? Why isn't he not overall number one? Why isn't he going the first round? Well, it's because people see what's going on. They see now that he's on a new team. They see that he's on a different kind of an offense, and they see that he's not going to be nearly as effective as he was on the team that ran him over 400 times for the Cowboys. And to be exact, let me see, how many rushes did he actually have? Well, you almost have 393 rushes, almost 400 rushes. And you know he's not going to get that many rushes on the Eagles. Now, why isn't he? Well, Chip Kelly is doing his 100 offensive plays per game routine where they never stop moving. He's going to be resting his running backs. He's not going to let DeMarco Murray sit out there, get tired, get a little bit lackadaisical on some of his carries, and then get hit in the wrong way and go down with a bad injury. He's not going to let that happen. So he's going to be pulling him out, and that's why they kept him, you know, and even though they signed Ryan Matthews first, that's why they, you know, obviously kept with that. And of course, then it cut Darren Sproles, is because now he's got a three-headed dragon he can put in there. So I think people are reading the writing on the wall, sitting there saying, yeah, number one, it was a victory as they pulled DeMarco Murray away from their the rival that for that division. But furthermore, you know, they do have a steady back that can pound the ball, you know, down near the goal line. Great. But he's not going to be the primary back. There isn't a primary back on that team. I mean, he might get the most carries, but when you look at the carries at the end of the day, RC, and when we look after week one, in fact, you're going to see that DeMarco Murray is going to suffer, that if he doesn't get, you know, 20 carries a game, his numbers are going to suffer, and you're not going to see 1,800 yards and over 2,000 all-purpose yards. You're just not going to see that with this guy, and I think that's where people are going to make a mistake. You know, listen, you know, biggest fan of him, I don't think he was
– Yeah, no, but like you said, everyone's acknowledging that, and, you know, obviously, you know, I acknowledge that too, but he was hanging out in the third round, and I took him. I think if you use as a model, like what happened with LeSean McCoy last year, I would be happy with that. I mean, remember, McCoy was a disappointment, but he ended up with over 300 carries for 1,300 yards and 5 touchdowns. If DeMarco Murray does that, I totally agree with you. You know, going from the Cowboys, where he was the centerpiece of that offense behind the best offensive line in football, to this situation is completely different. But if you use what happened with McCoy last year, 1,300 yards and 5 touchdowns, I'm fine with that, and that should be what happens. The one weird thing that happened last year, though, with McCoy, and the thing that really killed his value, and it's going to happen with Murray, obviously, is did you notice how little utilized McCoy was in the passing game last year? He only had 38 targets, 28 catches, and 155 yards. And this is for a running back that is very good in the passing game. So that was the weird thing about what happened with McCoy last year, and that definitely is going to happen with Murray. Now, I don't think Murray is competent in the passing game. The Cowboys used him. He had 64 targets and 416 yards. But that's going to probably go down on the Eagles for some reason, where Chip Kelly, like you're saying, Chip Kelly's nutty offense, God knows what he's doing. Ryan Matthews, I guess, is going to be the third down guy. But, yeah, I totally agree. There's no way that DeMarco Murray ever sees 1,800 yards this year, probably never again.
No, he, and you're absolutely right. He's not going to see it, and that's fine. I mean, I would beg to see, you know, I'm sitting here looking at that 312 carries, and, of course, that's fine. That's of course, quite a few off of the carries that DeMarco Murray did with the Cowboys. And as you can see in the Chip Kelly offense, you know, he went from 52 catches the year before to 28 catches, and that's just part of the offense. I mean, when you have a fast-moving offense and wide receivers are able to get open easier and you know, in the quick no-huddle type offense, it's going to happen. But I don't believe that DeMarco Murray will break 250 carries for this team. And one of the reasons – what was that?
No. See, that would be a deal breaker. Now, if that actually happens, then you're right. Then I shouldn't have even taken him in the third round, because that really makes him into a full-time platoon back kind of situation. And then you're right. Then his value should have been much lower. But say I'm expecting that he's going to be the early down guy, you know, according to what happened last year. But now, what's the reason why you think only 250?
Well, because they want to keep him healthy. They want to keep him fresh. And the way you do that in this kind of an offense is, you know, he's going to go in there and he's going to go in there for a whole set as they move the ball down the field, not stopping, no huddle, nothing stops the game. And then finally when they, you know, on the next series when they come out, they're gonna bring in Ryan Matthews. They'll say, okay, Ryan, you go in there, you get the job done, because really in an offense like that, both those running backs are going to be very effective. Both of them are very good pass-catching running backs. Both of them are very good running backs that can you know, pound the ball. I mean, obviously, DeMarco Murray is quite better than Ryan Matthews, but nonetheless, they can both do it. You know, so they're going to put Ryan Matthews in for the next series. Now, they're not going to stop in the middle of that series that Ryan Matthews goes in there, and they pull off eight plays and hopefully end up kicking like a, you know, an 18-yard field goal, because I don't want to see him score touchdowns. But assuming that they go the 8 or 9 plays, they're not going to stop and take Ryan Matthews out and bring DeMarco Murray in, because it's hurry-up offense. They don't switch out the players. So this is where I have the problem with the Chip Kelly offense. Now, he didn't have other guys to go to with LeSean McCoy. He had LeSean McCoy, and then he had junk after that, except for Darren Sproles. And Darren Sproles wasn't all that great for him to always bring in. Well, now he has two running backs. I think there was a philosophy behind, you know, why they went out and got DeMarco Murray and why they went out and got Ryan Matthews and why they kept Darren Sproles, who they're, you know, even looking at him in a wide receiver role. And, you know, and why they said basically we could put any wide receiver that's talented in this offense and make it work. So they went and, of course, they drafted a you know, top-notch wide receiver. And then of course, you know, they have Jordan Matthews, who they drafted last year. He's a Chip Kelly guy, you want to call him. So I think this offense is going to be interesting to watch, but I just really feel that you're going to be lucky to get between 250 and 275 carries at most from DeMarco Murray, and that's enough for me to just sit here and say, you know what, I'd just rather move on from this team. But before, you know, we spent a lot of time. I want to see what you think. I did actually partially the opposite of what you did in this draft. The draft that we're, you know, the Pirate League draft, where, I mean, I told you, I mean, I did the same thing you did, where I took a running back in the first round, Le'Veon Bell, but then I remember I told you, like, listen, then I said, I'm not even worried about another running back. I'm so strong at running back, I'm going to focus on receivers and quarterbacks. And I followed that up with T.Y. Hilton in the late second round, followed by Mike Evans in the early third round. And then, of course, in the fourth round, I was very happy he was still there. I mean, his ADP dictated it, but nonetheless thrilled that he slipped. And I got Drew Brees in round four. So just going to the first four rounds, forget the rest of the draft right now, I'm sitting on a very good quarterback who I think is going to be just fine. I mean, he's still Drew Brees. He had an off year last year, but I still think he's effective, more effective than some of the other quarterbacks out there. And then I got two top-notch wide receivers, and then, of course, I got an absolute stud at running back. So, you know, coming in round five, I'm sitting here thinking, the game is, I can do what I want. And I got a little risky, and I took Joseph Randall in round five because he was there, and he had been going in other rounds. And I said, well, you know, I'd like to get the Cowboy running back with that offensive line. But, of course, you know, we're not 100% sure what his, you know, the exact role is going to be. So I took a little bit of a chance. So then I followed that up with C.J. Spiller, and that's where I'll stop my draft. After that, it's just more and more fantastic picks that are going to blow your mind, and I don't want to you know, make you cry. But
well, all right, so you got Bell in the first, then you went with two receivers, two very good ones, T.Y. Hilton and Mike Evans. Then you got your quarterback at four. I mean, I can't argue with any of that. But all right, so you're willing to basically compromise your running back. So you want to get two elite receivers. You wanted to make sure you got an elite quarterback, which you did. Then now you're taking a gamble, though, with Joseph Randall and C.J. Spiller. And it's the same gamble you took last year that you regretted, and you're hoping it's going to work out different this year.
Well, I mean, Randall is Randall. I mean, you know, I believe Randall will be the starting running back in Dallas. I mean, his only competition is Darren McFadden and Lance Dunbar, and Dunbar is not in the competition. It's really between Randall and McFadden, and no matter what all the talk is, I think when the Cowboys suit up and hit the field game one, Joseph Randall will be behind Tony Romo for the first play of the first offensive play of the game for the Cowboys. So I think that let me put it this way, if I did get DeMarco Murray, you know, reincarnated in Joseph Randall, otherwise the numbers, you know, the position, the numbers, the team, if I got that in the fifth round after getting those four players, then this league is going to be in some trouble because I was compromising my running back number two in order to load up the rest of my team, and I ended up getting him. And I backed him up with C.J. Spiller, who, if he can stay healthy and play the role, that the Darren Sproles role, which if you noticed last year, I mean, one of the big sufferings that occurred for the Saints is the loss of Darren Sproles really impacted their entire offense. We talked about this earlier in the season, that Sean Payton had to go back to the drawing board and say, time out, guys. I mean, we didn't have, you know, that fast little speedster coming out of the back. Yeah, we had Pierre Thomas, but he got defense's attention. So they, you know, they went out and they replaced him. They said, fine, we don't have Darren Sproles anymore. Now we're going to get C.J. Spiller. He's not going to be our main running back. He's not going to take a pounding and get hurt. He's going to be the guy who's going to be our third down back, and he's going to be our change of pace back. And I really do think that he could put up enough points if he stays healthy. That's always a humongous if in the room, the elephant on the wall there, is that if. If he could stay healthy, that he would be able to put up enough points to be a running back two, definitely a running back three in a flex position type situation. That's how I was looking at loading that up. But you got to appreciate at least what went down here by before even round seven, that I had three running backs, two wide receivers, two wide receivers, a quarterback, and three running backs in the first six rounds. And I managed to do all that by taking some late picks. I don't know, RC, you know, and we haven't even gotten to the later picks, you know. I think this team is shaping up to be okay for it, for a good championship run.
Okay. No, Ben, I have no problem with Joseph Randall. I think you're right, where he should be the primary guy. And if he is, I mean, he looked pretty good last year when he got a chance. I think he had like 6 yards per carry. So I think that was a pretty solid pick. I was referring to specifically C.J. Spiller, who I understand, you know, he's in that new situation, and the expectations are that he could replace like a Sproles type role. But can he really? You know, I think Buffalo toyed around with that, and that didn't work out either. So I just have my questions about that Spiller. And, you know, he is already hurt, right? So he's out. He just had his knee scoped. He's got Mark Ingram and also Kerry Robinson ahead of him. So you just have to wonder what's going to happen with Spiller. You know, a big difference from last year was, I think, didn't Spiller go like